Then we settle down and take our chairs as we get into the second session of these national public hearings on the preservation and development of agricultural land. We had a morning session that was quite an interesting engagement. We will now proceed with the last remaining entities, that being Mineral Council of South Africa, MCSA, which will be followed by the Black Agricultural Commodities Federation, and last but not least, Inyanda National Land Movement and Rural Women's Assembly of South Africa. Allow me, honorable members, to invite the Mineral Council of South Africa, as represented by Yusura Brown.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon, Honorable Members. I'm also here with my colleagues, Mr. Tabelo Chibane and Stefina Madao, and Mr. Bongani, Mr. Chair, from a Minerals Council perspective, just to give you a brief overview of who we are. We are a voluntary membership employer organization representing the interests of mining companies producing about 90% of South Africa's mineral production and employing about 90% of the employees employed in the mining sector. Before we go into the substantive inputs on the bill, I'm just going to hand over to my colleague Bongani. Just to provide you with a brief overview of mining's contribution to the economy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashla, and good morning, or good afternoon, Chair and colleagues. So I think before, basically to preface my presentation of the two slides regarding mining contribution to the South African economy, here is a fact that I'd like to share. All what you see here, all what you see in this room, is a result of two economic activities. It is mining and agriculture. All other activities, in fact, are a result of these two activities. So it is true that if it cannot be grown, then it has to be mined. So getting then to mining's contribution to the South African economy. I'll start here in this chart, in this slide here at the top left, that table there, which talks to intermediate inputs and intermediate sales. At the bottom there, you have the total under intermediate inputs. What I'd like to highlight there is that mining procures over 344 billion in goods from local suppliers. And if you compare that to the agricultural sector, the agricultural sector procures 244.1 billion. And that statistics is for 2022. And it is sourced from Statistics South Africa. I would also like to note that we procure over 100 billion from state-owned enterprises. So without mining, Eskom and Transnet would barely exist, because they wouldn't have the resources to invest and also the resources to hire or employ people. Something else that I'd like to note here is that over 420 billion worth of what we produce, we actually sell locally through beneficiation to some extent, but also raw materials. And we compare that to 63 billion by the agricultural sector. A single miner, if I go to the top right of the table that I'm talking to now, here we're highlighting what a single miner contributes to the South African economy. One thing is clear is that one miner generates over 1 million rands in terms of GDP.
The two sectors, if you see those red blocks there, the two sectors that are ahead of us, it's utilities, which is electricity and water, as well as transport and communication. Those two sectors are actually dominated by state-owned enterprises, which are virtual monopolies. But it is true that mining plays a bigger role in the South African economy, in the sense that one worker contributes over R1 million in terms of GDP value added. I would also like to highlight the fact that in terms of the multipliers, here I'm talking to the tax or the bottom right, we employ about 466,000 people. At the end of the chain, we have generated over 1.2 million jobs and contributed to the South African economy over 1 trillion rands. So it just tells us or emphasizes or underlines the point that mining is vital for the South African economy. Before I move on from this slide, this is critical really for our understanding and our appreciation of what mining does. One, it provides stable employment, and it also provides a higher income per capita, per worker, compared to any other sector in South Africa. The only two sectors that are ahead of us is again utilities, which is Eskom, as well as Transnet. The chart there at the bottom right, this is very, very important for the South African economy. It shows that most of the export earnings are generated by mining in terms of foreign exchange earnings. Such that, here's an example. If you want to go abroad, you cannot use rands there. You have to convert your rands to dollars. Those dollars, most of them in South Africa, are generated by what we sell, are generated by what we sell as the mining sector. Also, those dollars help us. They help the South African government to service their external debt. They also help us to buy capital, to import capital equipment from abroad. And also, also something that we want to highlight, which is in the next slide here, is that mining plays a big role in four provincial of the nine provincial economies: Northwest, Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Limpopo. These provinces significantly rely on mining. More than 20% of these provincial economies rely on mining. So it just tells us the importance of mining. Before I conclude and let my colleagues to take over, in terms of corporate income tax, we contribute 18% as the mining sector. In fact, all of us perhaps are aware that in 2020 and 2021, we paid the figures because of high commodity prices. In 2020, the chart on the bottom right there, it shows on an average year that we contribute about 28 billion to corporate income tax. In 2020, we actually contributed 78 billion. In 2021, it was 101 billion in corporate income tax, and that is why the Minister of Finance really did congratulate or paid homage to the mining sector. And then finally, the pie chart on the bottom left, there we show that basically we also contribute to other indirect taxes such as excise duties. So from here, I'll just hand over to my colleagues, Stefina.
Thank you, Bongani. Chair, based on that, I think it's clear that we recognize that both mining and agriculture are equally vital, desired sectors of the South African economy, and the Minerals Council therefore fully supports the sustainable development of agricultural land for food security purposes, sustainable livelihoods, and economic development. We are of the firm view, Chair, that the bowl should represent a holistic view of national interests to ensure the achievements of all of the critical national imperatives. There needs to be an equitable balancing of agricultural needs against justifiable economic and social development by recognizing the role of mining in the national interest. And I think, Chair, as you alluded to in your statement when we started the session, there needs to be a cost-benefit analysis that takes into account socioeconomic and environmental interests. And therefore, we believe that the bill should introduce a mechanism to strengthen the current practices of mutual coexistence of mining and agriculture. Based on the comments that we've heard during the earlier discussion and also looking at the objectives of the bill, we do, however, believe, Chair, that the bill does appear to be contrary to the national legislation on mineral resources, in that it undermines national legislation and policies on mineral resources. In this regard, we would like to refer you to the objectives of the MPRDA as set out in Section 2 of that legislation. And one of the key objectives of the bill, of the MPRDA, is to promote orderly and ecologically sustainable mineral development to ensure socioeconomic development of mining areas. We believe, Chair, unfortunately, that the tenure of the Preservation and Agricultural Land Bill will certainly negate the objective of sustainable development of mining and mineral resources. We also refer you to the National Development Plan, Chapters 3 and 4 of the current National Development Plan, which emphasizes the role of mineral resource development in job creation, export earnings, and infrastructure development. We also recognize in Chapter 3 the role of Chapter 6, inclusive rural economies, but we caution that that cannot be looked at in isolation, and that the NDP needs to be looked at holistically. We also refer you to Section 12, subsection N of SPLUMA, which requires that spatial development plans must give effect to the principles of mineral development and resources. Just coming to our key concerns, Chair, I think one of the critical challenges that we have with the current bill before us is that it vehemently opposes mining through restrictions and imposing additional authorizations for mining on agricultural lands. The comments that we've heard earlier from some of the stakeholders here is that the bill does not seek to give preferential treatment to agriculture, but it is our submission, Chair, that the effect of the bill is exactly to give preferential treatment to agriculture. One of the key concerns we have is that it obliges municipalities to designate all land as agricultural land, except the land that has specifically been excluded under the bill, and there are four exclusions. And we believe that this is a flawed approach, as it appears to intrude on the municipal competence in respect of municipal planning. We also of the view that the bill runs contrary to the One Environmental System, which represents government's commitment to improve the ease of doing business through streamlining authorizations and enhance South Africa's global competitiveness as a mining investment jurisdiction by the imposition of yet another layer of authorizations, which will be required through this bill, which we believe will just add and increase the administrative burden on applicant holders, on applicants of rights. We believe that the fundamental and root cause of the problem lies in the declaration of protected agricultural areas coupled with the definition of agricultural land and the definition of reserve. And we further believe that the unqualified predominance in clause 11 of declared protected agricultural areas will certainly result in the sterilization of mineral resources and reserves. Coming to the specific issues, Chair, with regard to the declaration of protected agricultural areas as provided for in clause 11 of the bill, we are concerned that this would go as far as the Minister of Agriculture designating certain no-go areas in agricultural land, which will certainly include mining. And we believe that the severe consequences of this declaration will not only result in the sterilization of mineral resources and reserves as earlier indicated, but it will present a substantial existential risk to the sustainability of the mining industry. And I think, Chair, the concern that we have is also aggravated by the fact that it's not only the Minister of Agriculture that would be able to do the declaration of agricultural areas, but even an MEC of a province would be able to do that. And as indicated, mining is a national competence. So we question, Chair, how it could be permissible for MEC to trump the Minister of Mineral Resources. With regard to the definition of agricultural land, as earlier indicated, there are all land in terms of the bill is deemed to be regarded as agricultural land, except if it falls in one of the four exclusions. And I think the key issue that we've already mentioned is the fact that it will include on the competence of the municipalities who has the constitutional right to determine land uses in the country. But when it comes to the specific exclusions, and we want to specifically pause here just to deal with three of the exclusions. The one is, all land would be regarded as agricultural land unless it is formally zoned for non-agricultural purposes prior to the commencement of the Act. And in this regard, we just want to point out, Chair, currently there are many that mining is currently being permitted to be lawfully permitted to be conducted on land that has not been zoned for any other purpose. You would recall in terms of Skluma that the zoning processes have not been completed, but irrespective of that, in terms of existing laws, ordinances, mining is lawfully permitted in terms of exemptions, in terms of consent uses, as well as in terms of departures. And this exclusion will disregard the lawful activities that's currently happening on that land. It will also, as I indicated, it also talks about zoning immediately prior to the commencement of the Act. And the question then, what happens if a piece of land is zoned subsequent to the commencement of this Act? In addition, from a planning perspective, Chair, if you look at mining as a land use typology, mining is source dependent. You cannot in advance plan where mining activities can or cannot happen. It actually is dependent where the resource is located. So from a planning perspective, you cannot in advance and identify specific areas that will be designated for agricultural use, specific areas that will be designated for mining use, because it's dependent on where the resource is located. One of the other exemptions is land that is lawfully excluded in terms of the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act. And currently mining is excluded in terms of the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act. The problem with this exemption as it's currently formulated in terms of the bill is that the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act is envisaged to be repealed in terms of the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Repeal Act, which will result that the exclusion of mining will only be applicable for the period of whilst the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act rate together with the transitional arrangements are currently in force, and in terms of the bill, that will only be 5 years after the promulgation of the bill. And then there's a third exclusion provided which allows the Minister of Agriculture to exclude areas in terms of a notice. The problem that we have with this exclusion is that it only requires the Minister to engage with other ministers and it's not necessary for her to obtain concurrence or consent of those other ministers. So what the wording of the legislation provides for is such declaration can be made after consultation and not in consultation. And there is significant jurisprudence that says after consultation does not require consent, you merely have to consider other views. And then with regard to the definition of preservation or preserve as it's reflected in the bill, and we would like to highlight here, Chair, it means any agricultural land, preserve is defined to mean to protect agricultural land from anything that would cause its current agricultural potential, capability, suitability or use to change or deteriorate or cause it to be lost for agricultural production. Looking at this definition and looking at mining, Chair, it is clear that mining by its nature will cause a disturbance on land. I think there's no question about that. And if you then apply this definition to the activity of mining, it clearly seems that mining will potentially never be allowed to be conducted on any piece of land that is defined as agricultural land. And we are of the view, Chair, that the preservation connotation clearly undermines the coexistence of both mining and agriculture, and it will definitely result in a sterilization of mineral resources. In this regard, Chair, we would clearly ask for an exemption from mining from the operation of this act, of this bill when it's enacted, because it's clear that any allegation that mining will have a negative impact on the agricultural potential and capacity or the use of agricultural land will result in the refusal of an agro-ecosystem authorization. Coming then to the specific authorization that is envisaged to be required, the concern we have here, Chair, is that this will create a further untenable situation for the mining industry. As the Minister of Agriculture will be able to identify activities requiring the agro-ecosystem authorization and then even refuse to grant that authorization if she believes that, you know, it goes against the grain of preserving agricultural land. We believe that this presents a trumping provision which overrides any rights or permits that will be granted by the Minister of Mineral Resources, as you would not be able to exercise your right or permit where the Minister of Agriculture refuses to grant such authorization. As indicated earlier, this clearly conflicts with the One Environmental System, which is aimed at streamlining the process for obtaining authorizations. And in this regard, we also would like to refer you to Section 50, Capital A of NEMA, that clearly sets out, the agreement that was reached between the Department of Water and Sanitation, the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, as well as the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment on how authorizations relating to mining need to be obtained. And lastly, Chair, what we want to conclude with is that the bill in its current form will significantly impede investment, growth and competitiveness of the mining industry. And I think in this current economic climate that we're operating, that is the last thing that we would want to happen. We reiterate the fact that mining is a national competence, and we therefore urge, Chair, that the policy intent of the bill should be revised to promote an equitable dispensation between agricultural interests and mining interests, which we've indicated are both national interests. We also request that mining should be expressly excluded from the definition of agricultural land and expressly excluded from the requirement of obtaining an agro-ecosystem authorization. And we also note, Chair, that in terms of Section 24, Capital O, subsection 2 of NEMA, there's already an existing process in terms of which the concerns of the agricultural department can be taken into account when an application in relation to a mining-related activity is made. And we submit, Chair, that the concerns processes that is envisaged to be conducted in terms of this bill be actually integrated in the current processes that's already provided for in terms of NEMA. Chair, this is our submissions, and we sincerely thank you for the opportunity to making the submissions. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. That is the presentation from the Mineral Council of South Africa. We will open the sessions for questions of clarity or comments.
Thank you, Voorzitter. I think they were quite clear. I have no questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Kabe.
Thank you, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation from the Mineral Council. I just want to reiterate, Chair, that the interest here is preservation and protection of agricultural land. And we have agreed that other sectors will coexist. But just and when the council is presenting, it's like suddenly agriculture woke up and they have struck a RONEF. What's the outcry if we're talking sustainability, we're talking about making sure that we don't lose what we have. It looks like agriculture in the elements of now they've woken up, they want to protect what is left of out of everything that has been taken. You know what is making me emotional, Chair, without going into details? I'm coming from Northwest. If you go to Klerksdorp, you go to Orkney, you go to Stilfontein, where mines has been, it's a sore sight, very sore sight. And I'm not negating that mining shouldn't be given an opportunity. Our communities are suffering. I don't even want to know, because I don't know the competence of the council as to why those are not being rehabilitated. People that used to work there, they know only one thing at the villages is agriculture. Let's leave it because the occupation of Amazon. I'm just saying if we have to debate, or now we are restricting mining expansion, where they depend on reserves and everything. I understand fully the economic thing of mining, the contribution they do. And I can tell you here and now, even if we go to recess tomorrow, the second quarter of next year, we'll be told it's agriculture that took the country out of recess. I'm not fighting. I'm just saying, if we have to really balance matters, let's balance them. But don't become so defensive that we forget for who are we? What skills do we have? And we are saying, let's preserve, let's protect. I don't have qualms that mining should crisis. The bill has got chapter 4 that deals with institutional arrangements, chapter 7 that deals with miscellaneous, where you can sit and have your standard, what procedures or whatever, regulations and everything. Where I'm sitting, I think the minister or the MEC will always be considering. There will be issues that are being gathered and everything. Now, for an MEC to not overrule a mineral minister is something else. Everyone has got their competence, and it is their duty to get what belongs to them or what they have been authorized to get. So, earlier on, I spoke about cooperative governance. These are all members under one cabinet. Where there are conflicting interests, let's sit down and talk. But we cannot leave the status quo to remain. Agricultural land is being depleted. And one of the key issues, beneficiary scheme, I mean, it's not a threat. When you go around Rustenburg, not far from me, where we stay, we drive 2 hours to Rustenburg from home. You know what is happening in the mining land? They put few animals there, people by cramped somewhere, mole by land, mole, there's nothing that is happening. All those mines, land, didikanaka. I don't even want to go to the issue study, Billy Summit, what do we call the hulas, that people will even fight, that mining getting my water rights instead of agricultural land. But these are the issues that if we have to talk about mining versus agriculture, and we come in here saying, today there's preference over mining, over agriculture than mining. Mining has benefited a lot. And hence I'm saying, let's balance issues. Let's not negate the bill, because we want to protect what is already existing that is benefiting others. I said earlier on, it's not a secret that even beneficiation is not happening here. They can create jobs. But others study rights, it's about whoever rights. They're happening somewhere. But beneficiation is happening somewhere. But that is not the case, Chair. I'm saying, let's use chapters 4 and 7 to deal what will be the concerns of your minerals resource minister versus your agricultural minister. But in all fairness, colleagues, we need to do something about the depletion of agricultural land. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Trapper. Sometimes it's perfect and necessary to fight in order to find one another. So do feel free to air out your quagmires. Maybe they'll bring us at the destination we all need to be at. And a visit, Kosenko.
And that was a chairperson. I think all Tapa said it all. All I was just talking here was just an example of the area where I come from. In a coal mining company in the northern desert and Tubatuba, to Kyom Forest Park. The mess, the depletion of the carbon, the water in the area where people can now make use of the water in the area. And they leave the area without rehabilitating them. So I think our staff has said that's what I wanted to say. But it's good for the Mineral Council to come up and defend what their bosses are are aiming for, because this is all what the Ankos are aiming for, to make sure that they continue mining, forcing people to move from the areas because they want to get close to those minerals, and afterwards they leave the areas dirty as they could. Thank you.
Thank you, Isabel. The Honorable Mama Chaita.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from the Mining Council. I'm glad, Chair, that there is a mining organization that is present today. From where we're coming from, the public hearings, I mean, we had a lot of contributions from people living in such areas. Now I'm glad that we are here. The fact of the matter, Chair, the negative impact and the degradation of agricultural land due to mining is irreversible. The mining companies get license, mine, but there is no rehabilitation after that. And people who are staying around those areas, those mining areas, cannot go back and plant or farm because the state of the land is no longer the same. The fact of the matter is most of the, or some of the agricultural land that is, some of the land that is occupied by the mining companies is agricultural land. The presenters here today mentioned socio-economic benefits. What are the time frames? They are very short. They are short-term. Those socio-economic benefits. And they benefit few. They benefit few and definitely not communities. The mining companies, they go to the communities, only go to certain individuals, maybe the chief or what, but not the entire community. And another point, Chair, to bring back everybody, the bill that we are talking about today, preservation and development of agricultural land bill, it does not abolish mining in the country, but we seek to preserve agricultural land. But Chair, I really appreciate and commend the mining sector for coming here and give us your inputs and enlighten some of your areas that this is how you feel about the bill and everything else. But the fact of the matter, it does not really accommodate the majority of the people that are affected by the agricultural land. If I can, I can remind committee members, in the Free State, there was a community that owns this land, but the very same mining companies have mining rights. Now they have to come to an agreement that you only use the topsoil and then we use the underground, which somehow it contradicts or it impedes someone's license or right to use the land. Thank you, Chairperson. That is what I wanted to raise.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The Honorable Babu Papa.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the presentation from the Mineral Council. So it's mineral, not mining council, mineral council. Okay. First of all, I would appeal that you reconsider the position of saying you feel that this vehemently opposed mine. I think that's too much to expect that this department and together with this committee can vehemently oppose mining, while we know the role and situation of the mining in the country, in our economy. That's point number one. Secondly, I would also like to note that in your input, I think it's an omission not to think about and mention any negative impact that mining can bring into the society. We have been going through provinces and several times we have been finding people who were giving examples of communities, children, schools who were affected by the mining activities. And those were genuine complaints and sometimes that things that can be scientifically and medically proved. And therefore, I don't think it's wise not to think about that part of mining. But mainly on our part, I think it is important to note that the existence of mining and agriculture maybe can drive you to those people who think, who say development is a product of unity and struggle of the opposites. If therefore mining and agriculture to some extent they are opposites, but they have to be there together, therefore they will take to somewhere. But now, mainly, why would you like or want that mining as part of this economy should be exempted from the regulations that seek to protect and develop agricultural land? Why would you seek that? Because it seems that you feel that mining should be left just to do anything anyhow, and not to be part of, and not to be regulated. And therefore, this is exactly what we are trying to fight here about this legislation, that agricultural land should be protected and developed. Why would mining not be able to think in both ways, that in this same country, that this agriculture is necessary, while mining is necessary, and therefore that the legislation should be assisting that while mining is continuing, it should not endanger agriculture. And that is what I think we should all understand. Attention.
Thank you, Honorable Thapa. The Honorable Mamumba Bama.
Chair, I don't have much to say, except to just highlight something that is in the presentation. In the presentation, it says mining is source dependent. And then again, it goes on to say the policy intent of the bill should be revised to promote equitable dispensation between agricultural interests and mining interests, which are both national interests. I'd just like to know, Ms. Brown, how would you balance the two? Because if mining is source dependent, then how does the bill actually promote equitable dispensation when we never know where the minerals will be at any given point in time? So what would be your idea of that? Since Kolobeni, I've never been a fan of mining, even though I understand its impact on our economy and it creates jobs. But, you know, you excuse me if I'm on the side of agriculture, really. I'm not saying that mining should not go on, but I feel that agriculture is more of a priority to the nation. I may be simplistic, but to me it's more of a priority. Because when you talk food security and all of that, even the mining that we're talking about would not be there if we didn't have this, the food security. So yeah, I think it's a difficult, did somebody say quest buyer, it's very difficult to balance the two. How are you going to do it? Then if this was my world, I would say agriculture. Thank you.
Of course, agriculture it is. Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also welcome the presentation from the mining council. I really to say thank you for your contribution to the economy. Sorry. Of mineral council. Apologies. My apologies. Yeah, and I think
I'm thinking of Limpo.
I may have to rest on a point of order. So, really, I think my colleagues kind of covered me, but I just have got a few points that I just want to maybe highlight. We've got only 12% arable land, and what we are trying to do in agriculture is to try and preserve whatever that is available for agricultural purposes. I think the question is, how do you want us to do it, really, in such a situation? Because, as you know, that food security is critically important, and for us to really ensure that the nation is food secured is to take measures possible to ensure that the nation, the land that is available is able to support our nation. That's the first one. But the second one is that there has been work going on or suggested by the Mineral Council of Mining Industry with regards to rehabilitating the existing land that has been left by mining sector to ensure that we can start doing agriculture on those land. The question for me is that what is the progress in that regard with regards to really helping agriculture to ensure that some of this pieces of ground that we've been operating on is working. One notes your key concerns being that this bill is opposed to mining, and obviously you are requesting that mining be exempted from this. I think, like my colleagues have said, is that mining, especially in rural areas, the people there are feeling left behind completely. The mining come and do their work. They don't know even the process as to how they got there. And basically, they don't even get employed in those activities. So I think the question for me is really to say, how are you really, what is your current process to just ensure that inclusion and agricultural land currently that the people are complaining about that is being taken by mining is being preserved? Because I think is quite key that we preserve agricultural land. I think the one area that I just wanted to check is the zoning process as to especially the communal land, which is naturally agricultural land. What is the zoning process when you get to have a mining in those rural areas, you know? And you talk about the one environmental system, which is about ease of doing business. Isn't it also one that is contributing to this, that, you know, mining just pop up, you know, here and there, you know, in rural areas, that, you know, people just wake up tomorrow, there is a mining, you know, operating, and they don't even know how they got the authorization. And I have got a case here with me of people when we were doing this public hearing, where members of the community are saying they've been removed from an area where they used to live. This place is now a mining place, and they were promised that they would be settled in an area where they could continue with their farming activities as such, but they were really not taken care of since they have been removed from that mine. So I just wanted to hear, what is your program of ensuring that when you have removed the people from the agricultural land and put them somewhere else, what is your kind of follow-up processes of ensuring that those people settled are able to continue with their agricultural activities? That's from my side, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ntate Masipa. Honorable members, let's just hand over back to the Mineral Council of South Africa for responses.
Honorable members, thank you so much for your questions. It's a lot of questions. What we will do is I will defer the questions in relation to
the... Please speak directly to the mic.
Apologies, Chair. What I'm saying is I will defer the questions relating to rehabilitation to Mr. Fina Mutau, who's our Head of Environment. I think she would be more eloquent in addressing those questions. If I can group some of the questions under one banner, and I think let me start with the question of mining is source dependent. I think that was the question, and what does it mean? I think what that means basically is you can only mine where you have a mineral resource. Okay, so if you have an area of land, you cannot upfront identify that this area will be demarcated for mining from a planning perspective. You have to prospect, you have to explore to find the mineral resource, and only once you have found the mineral resource would it be feasible to actually undertake mining activities on that area. So when we say from a planning perspective it's difficult to plan in advance for mining, because it's source dependent, we basically say you have to follow where the mineral reef is, where the resource is, to be able to identify where it's feasible for mining to take place. So what this bill suggests, and the concern that we have, is that all areas in the land need to be regarded as agricultural land unless it falls within those four exemptions as provided for in the bill. At this point in time, we're saying it is not possible to determine in advance where mining could potentially take place, and hence from that perspective, plan accordingly for mining. So if your land is currently not zoned for mining purposes, the effect of this bill will be that it will be impossible in future to undertake mining on areas that has not been zoned for mining. And this is why we're making the comment that mining is source dependent and you cannot plan in advance from a planning perspective. I think with regard to the question on the coexistence of mining and that recognition is being given to the fact that the two mining and agriculture need to coexist. I think we're clear on that, but what the effect is of the bill based on the wording of the bill is that it's not going to be possible for mining and agriculture to coexist, because in terms of the bill and in terms of the wording of the bill, it suggests that agriculture will have preferential treatment above other non-agricultural uses. So I think we are in agreement with the principle, and what we're asking for is that the wording of the bill needs to be revised to ensure the coexistence of both mining and agriculture happening. And I think aligned with that, the question was, you know, how would we balance the two competing interests? And I think sitting here today, we already have clear examples of how mining and agriculture is coexisting. Mining is a very regulated activity, and I think I will also in this answer the question relating to the one environmental system. Before you are able to undertake a mining activity, you need to do an environmental impact assessment to understand, you know, what will be the impact of the activity on the environment, and that includes the land and the land rehabilitation at the end of the day. So prior to you being given a mining right, you need to understand exactly, in terms of your environmental impact assessment, what is the adverse consequences of this activity on the land, on the air, on all aspects, and then you need to plan in your environmental management plan how you're going to mitigate and remediate those negative impacts. So there are stringent regulatory processes that you need to follow for you to obtain a mining right. And because of, you know, the fragmented processes that was in place in the past, it took you, and to a certain extent today, so a significant number of years before you even get mining authorization, an environmental authorization, a water use license, an air quality license, whatever your impact assessment reflected. So that is why the one environmental system came into place, to ensure that all of these fragmented processes that are operating in silos are integrated into one process to streamline that authorization process, so that you know, all of these issues that are duplicated through the various processes are integrated into one. And the process of obtaining your suite of authorizations are actually then, you know, significantly streamlined, and also the timelines associated with that is significantly reduced. And what we are saying is that there is already a structured process as provided in terms of the National Environmental Management Act, Section 24 specifically of NEMA, that provides for the integration of these processes to happen. The Department of Agriculture is one of the stakeholders that is being consulted in these authorization processes, and all we're saying is that instead of creating a new process, an environmental agri-ecosystem authorization that is distinct from these integrated processes, align that in the existing process so that you avoid a duplication of processes and, you know, actually stifle the economic activity, because the longer you take for your authorization to be obtained, the longer it will take for you to actually implement whatever activity it is that you want to undertake. I think the question that was specifically asked in relation to why do we believe that mining needs to be exempted, and I think the comment was made by the honourable member that we need to reconsider the word vehemently. I think the criticality of this bill and the impact it will have, you know, on the mining industry, this would demonstrate, you know, what the effect will be. But I take your point. We need to work together to find a solution. And I think it's important that, you know, we find balancing between the needs of the respective sectors. Why do we believe, you know, it's necessary for mining to be exempted? I think the important issue for us is that, based again on the current structure of the bill, it is clear that it's unlikely that mining will be able to be conducted if the bill in the current form proceeds. because the tenure of the bill suggests that certain areas of land need to be preserved, and based specifically on the definition of preserve, it's clear, you know, that it's unlikely that you will get an authorization to continue with mining activities. The issue with regard to the agro-ecosystem authorization, again, it's in the prerogative of the Minister of Agriculture to issue, to issue that authorization. And based, again, on the definition of preserve, it will clearly be alleged, or allegations will be made, that this particular activity will have a negative impact on the future land capability, and hence, based on that, an agro-ecosystem authorization will be denied. So we're saying to avoid, you know, finding yourself in a situation where the bill doesn't promote mining to happen, let's exclude then mining from the operation of the bill. And this is not something new. I think the point that I've made earlier, in terms of the current Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act, mining is exempted from the operation of that act. And a point that I want to make is that the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act in its current form was envisaged to prevent the fragmentation of agricultural land in uneconomical pieces. What this bill seems to do is actually prevent non-agricultural uses from happening on agricultural land. So there's a complete disconnect between what the Subdivision of Agricultural Land Act did and what the intention is with this bill. Yes. Let me take a break.
Just to allow my colleague to gather her thoughts there, and then I'll also hand over to my other colleague, Mr. Fina. Honourable members, just maybe to address one or two questions, you know, just to really firstly reinforce the words of my colleague, Kamusta, that was just, you know, talking about, you know, the value of mining to South African society. And it is important to note the message that we are trying to give today is, yes, we must try to strike that balance. And it is important that a country strikes that balance. But it's important just to realize the power of mining. I mean, and yes, you know, mining activity creates towns, it creates cities like Johannesburg. And yes, unfortunately, if those towns and cities are not adequately planned for and what have you, it does create a ghost town. So our responsibility is certainly to try to ensure that, you know, as we mine, we also plan for closure, which is something that certainly that has come through in terms of the new dispensation. And that is absolutely something that has to be done. So it's important, though, to realize that mining has that kind of real destiny-changing power that we certainly need in the country. I want to give also another example of, you know, what mining does. I mean, if you look at the Northern Cape, and you look at the, you know, this, you know, especially that certain areas like the Vaal, the Gamagara area, which is pretty arid. You know, if you look at the Vaal Gamagara water supply scheme, that pipeline taking water from the Vaal to certain areas, the arid areas in the Northern Cape. Now, that pipeline, which is now 50 years old and is currently disintegrating, I mean, it is mining companies that are going to be paying for half of the refurbishment of that pipeline. Yes, mining companies are going to be utilizing the water, but they're not the only ones that are going to be utilizing the water. It will be communities, it will be other economic sectors that will be using that water. But mining will be the one that will actually carry the burden to ensure that this pipeline is refurbished. So in looking at, you know, what does mining do, I think we really need to appreciate that the significant good that mining can do, while also being mindful, yes, there's, you know, especially from our past, the real challenges with mining that is not done in a sustainable or manner that is aware of the damage that it can do to the environment. So, honourable, I'm not too sure if it was honourable that said it or saying the mining projects are short term and not impacting communities. I mean, a lot of the projects that we do are just certainly not known about, honourable members. Now, honourable members, you must also remember that the mining companies are the only companies that have to do what we call social and labour planning, where they've got to essentially, by legislation, do socioeconomic development in the areas where they are. Other companies do so, and other sectors do so well for BE points and the like. Mining companies, it's part of their license to operate. And there is no other sector in the economy that comes close to the contribution that mining does in terms of socioeconomic development. Now, is it perfectly SLP system? No, it's not. I mean, it does require, we're talking about, they do them in batches of 5 years, which we actually say is too short term. So unfortunately, yes, there are a lot of more short term projects that need to be implemented. We do think that it should be you should have a longer period, longer planning horizon. We should allow for more integrated regional planning. But unfortunately, those are the kind of laws that we're dealing with, and we are certainly trying to engage our regulator to try to change it so that the project can be more impactful. But the potential, though, to be creating more destiny-changing, longer-term projects by mining companies is still there. Let me just take it right now and just pass over to my colleague.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Just to expand on the responses that my colleague Ashla gave with respect to a couple of issues, I'll start firstly with the comment around the use of the One Environmental System and also the assertion that was made as to is it not why we find ourselves in the situation that we are today. And the answer to that is no. I mean, those of you that might be aware of the challenges that the mining industry had in the past in terms of it being subjected to duplicatory, fragmented authorizations, and in certain instances a mine would have an approved environmental management program in terms of the NPRDA, and over and above that the province will come and require the same authorization from them. So to streamline that, and another critical challenge that the One Environmental System resolved was you've probably heard before in the media, wherein there would be allegations around mines operating without the requisite water use license authorizations, and there would be instances where a mine has been waiting for 10, 15 years for the water use license authorization. So what the One Environmental System did was to streamline the process, one, and also bring in some tight deadlines to say all the required authorizations should be obtained within 300 days. And what that does is it sort of improves compliance, because I mean, if you don't have a license and if you've been waiting for it for 15 years, obviously you would carry on with your operation, carry on with to use water which you are not authorized, and in that the impact would be that there isn't any license conditions that you're operating under. And we brought in the aspect of the One Environmental System in this particular regard when we were raising the concerns around the additional duplicatory agroecosystem authorization that the bill, the PDAL bill requires. And with that, we are saying that we do have quite a number of mining companies operating in high-value agricultural land, and for some reason there seem to be a very good correlation between the mineral deposits
and high value agricultural land. Hence the situation that we find ourselves in. And in this particular regard, in as far as the agroecosystem authorization is concerned, we are saying there's already a process in place in terms of the environmental authorization, wherein the agricultural considerations or potential is one of the critical things that are being looked at during the EIA process. And we've seen, you know, for some of our members, the environmental management program does really go into more detail in terms of understanding the status quo around the agricultural potential of the area, and most importantly, putting in place the necessary mitigation measures to ensure that the rehabilitation that will happen in that particular land still does support agricultural activities as the land end use objective of the land. And second to that, we've also seen a number of, in the number of areas where there is, you know, mutual coexistence between mining and agriculture, wherein the two activities are happening in harmony. The other issue that I want to address is the concerns that we raise with regards to lack of rehabilitation. And I have some examples that were given. I had some examples that were given in relation to rehab of legacy or historic mining activities, which just to indicate, you know, from the context perspective to say those legacy mines were developed at the time when South Africa did not have the requisite legislation and policy to deal with rehabilitation and you know, comprehensive environmental management that we have now, and there's a separate process to deal with those. But I also want to come to rehabilitation and mine closure planning in as far as the current mining operators are concerned. And I must say that this is one of the areas that is highly regulated. I mean, if you compare mining and other economic activities, mining is the only sector that is required by law to undertake closure planning. In other instances, we just hear a factory is closed and there isn't any you know, requirements for, you know, closure planning in terms of economic succession, in terms of, you know, rehabilitating to support a particular end land use objective when the mine closes. We also have to strengthen the rehabilitation agenda and also to ensure that we do not have the legacy or historic mining sites that we have now that are quite recent in our country. We also have the requirement for financial provision for rehabilitation or for premature closure. And in that particular financial provision kitty, we have a couple of billions sitting there waiting for, in the unlikely event, for premature closure, or if a company is not able to undertake its rehabilitation obligations, then the state can withdraw that money and do the necessary rehabilitation and remediation. Thank you, Chair. I'll end here in the interest of time. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Members. That's the responses from the Mineral Council of South Africa. We will now move on to the time constraints to our next presentation from the Black Agricultural Commodities Federation, which will be presented by Mike Ngabo.
Thank you.
questions this afternoon, members of parliament, only let the request to sit down and speak directly to the mic and go to them. Because when you are standing, you are far away from the mic. It won't be audible and won't be able to record you adequately. When they said to you, members of parliament, honorable members, to be given an opportunity to address you on this very important topic and discussion, we are grateful for this opportunity, and therefore we would like to get to the meat of our conversation. But before I do that, having shown my respect, I would like to introduce my team as follows. Sitting on my immediate left is Dr. Moshe Swart, who's the CEO of the Black Agricultural Commodities Federation, whose hair complexion is better than mine. Accompanying me behind me is Mr. Ismail Murtala, who's from the Figures Fruit Commodities Federation, which is a member of the Black Agricultural Federation. Now, by way of introduction, I need to make mention that and introduce who is this Black Agricultural Commodities Federation. We are comprised of initially six commodities, and by that I need to qualify. When I say commodities, I'm referring to farmer organizations that focus on specific commodities of the agricultural industry. In alphabetical order, we've got the African Game Ranchers Association. That organization's focus area is game or Kenya wildlife. For my sins, I am myself, or I'm the head of this organization. Followed by the Deciduous Fruit Development Chamber of South Africa, as I've introduced my colleague Ismail Murtala, heads up that organization. Followed by African Poultry Producers, again, as the name is self-explanatory, all they concern themselves about is birds, particularly poultry that require. Then we've got South African Farmers Development Association, or SAFDA, as we call it by acronym, and followed by Livestock Wealth, and finally South African Grain Farmers Development, and their focus area is the grains. And everything that pertains there to including the processing aspects thereof. By way of introduction, we'd like to give context to who we are and the environment or the milieu within which we operate. Now, I'm going to quote from a survey, a general household survey, conducted in 2021 by CSSA. From the survey, we know that of about the 3 million households, 17.3% of whom are involved in agricultural activities, with an almost equal split between Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal of about 32% each, and 44% in the Eastern Cape, 12% of them reported that they're involved in food production, as they are, as we quote, their main source of food. While about 75% stated that agricultural production activities provide an extra source of food for their households. We visit E.G. Whitesworth in his sustainable and tested design for eradicating hunger. He observed this point, that the light-hearted men and women who are anxiously considering the condition of the poor and what means can be found for their relief. Now, also connected thereto is how the unemployed and the homeless can be helped to secure the common presence of God's providence and to live the life he intended men to live. And that he possesses the question to which many are earnestly endeavoring to find an answer to. E. White again makes the point that there are not many, even those who are blessed with some semblance of education, statesmen, who are supposedly comprehending the causes that underlie the present state of society, those who hold the reins of government and sometimes power in parliament, are unable to solve the problem of poverty, pauperism, and increase in crime. They are struggling in vain to place business opportunities or operations on a more secure basis. I will not spend much time on the teachings of the Old Testament. The beauty is that this presentation was shared with you before, so we do trust that members of Parliament have had the opportunity to go through it, or they will do so at their own leisure when time permits. Now, we visit a number of countries, and we cite three of which are members of BRICS, and BRICS being a topical discussion point of late. That's hopefully not a flavor of the month. And we find that the experiences of at least three of those structural economic transformations, namely India, China, Brazil, all of them South Africa's BRICS partners, are indisputable testimonies to the master design of land use and management, as we do cite, articulated by E.G. White. And so we cite these as illustrative instruments. When we compare India, China, Brazil, and Kenya in terms of structural transformation experiences, we find that it belongs to a group of countries characterized by large subsistence and smallholder producer populations that constitute the majority of the agricultural sector. Further modern testimony is that investment by the state in land development, support of subsistence and smallholder scale farmers undergirded what has proven a successful economic transition for China and India from the middle of the 20th century. We observe a similar trend played an important role in Brazil's remarkable success in family farming driven poverty eradication or reduction at the beginning of the 21st century. And so there are a number of key lessons that we draw. One of such we would like to term the importance of a joined-up government. And the key lesson that we draw from China and India is that agricultural transformation succeeds best only when driven by the phenomenon of joined-up government. Now, what is the importance of this joined-up government that we present to you? China's agrarian transformation was not only successful to this consistent provision of support to and careful organization of its small-scale farmers, but the fact that agricultural reforms were bolstered by the interlinking rural development and economic diversification measures that integrated all sectors of the economy. Now, key among these were purposeful, and I do say intentional, investments in public infrastructural development, human capital and poverty eradication or alleviation interventions driven by the state. Here we're showing an illustration of a case in point where an example of investment in public infrastructure. I will not consume time on that.
Well, no. I would request that you speak directly to the mic for recording purposes.
My sincere apologies, I shall correct. So we then proceed to the key objects of the bill as we understand them. And for that matter, we do want to state as follows: that the Black Agricultural Commodities Federation fully supports the objectives of this bill. And to give context to why we support the objectives of this bill, we state as follows: that land is a finite resource. As I said the last time we checked, God has stopped making more land. So there will not be any more land additional to the state which we have. In fact, land is receding. It is in fact even much more so that agricultural land is even a greater threat as a subset of the total quantum of land available. And therefore, for the first time, we have got to say that we think that this is a noble initiative from Parliament and government to preserve agricultural land. For if we do not, we are tinkering quite dangerously on the threat of food insecurity. And so therefore, it is against that backdrop and understanding that we support the objectives of this bill in so far as it pertains to the following. A, that it is understanding it seeks to promote the preservation and sustainable development of agricultural land. And it also seeks to demarcate protected agricultural areas to ensure that agricultural land is preserved and protected against non-agricultural uses in order to promote long-term agricultural production. I do need to make this point that accepting that land is a finite and in fact receding resource, we do accept that there are competing and sometimes conflicting interests for land use. Whilst respecting that, we do argue and contend that if you are not able to preserve agricultural land for food security, you are undermining the very essence of this democracy that you are supposed to be enjoying, and that you, honorable members of parliament, are supposed to be custodians of it for and on behalf of the citizenry of this country. So therefore, we do say that if without food security, we wonder if there is value to this democracy that we so cherish today, 30 years later. And for that, if nothing else, we strongly contend that this is a step in the correct direction, and therefore our unequivocal and unflinching support towards this bill. And it is our hope that in due time we will see it being accented as a piece of legislation. Of course, we do note that other objects of this piece of legislation, or at least bill, is to discourage land use changes from agricultural to non-agricultural uses to prevent fragmentation of agro-ecosystems and to facilitate concurrent uses on agricultural land without jeopardizing long-term food security. I think this point I have made earlier on. Having given resounding support to this bill, there are a number of things that we would like to draw the committee's attention to. And those are the following. One, that the objects of this bill needs to be aligned to those of the United Nations Decade on Ecosystem Restoration 2019-2030 by doing the following. One, by promoting the protection and revival of land use as indigenous agro-food forests that support the livelihoods of indigenous people. To halt the degradation of such cultural ecosystems. To finance sustainable farming and facilitate nature-based solutions to environmental degradation that is associated to climate and nature crises, and the object of transforming South Africa's exclusionary food systems to ensure broadened food security and end hunger has to be included. You would know, and here I cite Wandile Sobo's two agricultural systems in this country.
Can conclude.
And in conclusion, we make a number of recommendations. On part three of the bill that deals with preparation of provincial agricultural sector plans, we would like to propose that the minister must prescribe criteria for the compilation of provincial agricultural sector plan to ensure a number of things. The next part of our recommendation is that we would like to include the preservation, protection, and expansion of land for the cultivation of indigenous cultural activities or other commodities such as fruit and herbal plants, and recognition and respect the diversity of cultural uses of agricultural land amongst those who use it. I will not get into the rationale. I will not deal with these examples. On the purpose of provincial sectors, our recommendation is we would like to include, to promote and give effect to the principle of equity by amplifying the voice of the previously disadvantaged users of agricultural land. A very important piece on institutional frameworks. The bill in its current form states that the minister may, therefore giving a right of choice. We would like to propose that the minister must, therefore making it mandatory and not for the minister to have the right to or not to. On the composition of the committee, we would like to have a stronger voice of the agriculture voice, and therefore we would like to have four, no less than four members from the agriculture area included in that committee. Chairperson, given the limitations of time, I'm going to rush off to an important part and deal here specifically with saying that if and when we have dealt with the preservation of land for agriculture, there is a threat that deals with the access to markets. And we argue vociferously that until and unless we bring about changes to the Marketing and Agricultural Products Act, or the MAP Act as we call it, we will solve the land problem, and yet we will not be able to solve the problem of agriculture in that we will not have access to markets. And therefore, we argue strongly for the revision of the Transformation of the MAP Act. In so doing, we would end the monopoly of the institution administering the levies on behalf of the smallholder farmers who are supposed to be beneficiaries of this initiative. And yet they speak for and on our behalf without us. To illustrate our point in conclusion, in the deciduous fruit industry, we've got 1,500 farmers, 33 of them being black. Of that total quantum, you've got a meager there, tiny percentage there. If you look at the total amount of land, about 52,000 hectares, only about 2%, which is 1,300 of those in the hands of black farmers. So if and unless we protect this agricultural land, this can only worsen. And therefore, for that, by way of an illustration, and this being a representative of the broad agricultural space, we contend and argue that this is a step in the right direction, and therefore our support for this initiative. Members of the committee, I therefore, given the time frame and the limitations of time, would cease my presentation at this point. We would be happy to take questions if the House so pleases.
Thank you, honourable members. As the presentation from the Black Agricultural Communities Federation, as presented by Ubao Mike Tabo. Any questions?
No, thank you, Chairperson. I'm covered. Thank you so much, and thank you for the presentation.
Honorable Tabo.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also appreciate the support that is expressed by the organization to this bill. And as the President has indicated, it will be very refreshing to have time and go through their presentation, especially on the lessons that they learn as they travel around your great country. I just want to check with Ndateka Wong. They spoke about the importance of the joined up government. With your experience from the South African situation, what would it be that's different from our DPP? Is there similarities or is something that is different? And so that we see how do we align, what is it that we learn? Because for effect, we would know that even if we have land reform, it will be different from that of China. Having
three programs here that is looking at, and China is doing something else, but all are working upon land reform. But I just wanted to check, what since they are developed, is our public-private partnerships similar to what you're calling joined up government or something different? I think on alignment, I support UN decade on ecosystem restoration. And I was thinking as I'm sitting here that those submissions are relevant. Hence this bill saying on the financing sustainable farming. As I know, we align with your municipalities and provinces. They must have those sector plans. Not only have them, but finance them. Make sure that they are financed. And I think that is covered. But I appreciate that at provincial level, the organization is even giving sort of criteria or itemized issues how the minister can deal with the provincial agricultural sector. I also agree on part three, those inclusions, Chair, and hence I'm saying at a glance, and as I'm listening to the presentation, this would be very interesting moving forward. Thank you, Chair. The rest we will take up with the department on those other recommendations as you have alluded to. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Thabe. Kosenko, the visitor, the Honorable Thabe Kulu.
Yeah, my Chair. Masibonge isathulo anginambuzo kosi anginamazwi futhi okungena.
Enkosi, Nkosi enkulu. The Honorable Paul Tapa.
Thank you, Chair. I have no questions also except to appreciate and say that thanks for the inputs and therefore you will be sure going to work on those together with others with the department for their recommendations on the proposed bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tapa. The Honorable Mbabama.
Good Chair, I just have one question, if I may. Who is EGY? That you quote from?
The Evangelist.
Because I'm not going over. No, this was my only question.
Yeah. Did you write the Evangelist?
No, we learn every day.
Very contested author, but we'll leave it at that. Honorable Dr. Masipa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I welcome also the presentation, but I have got maybe one or two questions. The first question obviously relate to part where they talk about part three. Talks about the recommendation. It says preserves, protects, and expands land for the cultivation of indigenous agricultural commodities such as fruit and herbal plants. Really, the question here is that the concerns were raised by some of the members that presented to us before us earlier this morning, is that this bill seemed to ignore the communal land. And some of these indigenous agricultural communities are in communal land. How are you proposing that this bill be applied on a communal land? Because the concerns were raised, because these communal lands are not seen as part of this in this particular bill. The last one that I just want to maybe just get clarity on, you talk about when you do this, promote and give effect to the principle of equity by amplifying the voice of the previously disadvantaged users of the land. And you also indicated that it must be agricultural or science-based, you know, in the application of this particular bill. So my question is, the bill obviously is to protect the agricultural land. So that's what we are here for. So have you seen some of the agricultural land maybe of this, black or disadvantaged users being kind of exploited as such by some and maybe, you know, the businesses as such, or what is the basis for really emphasizing or amplifying this message in this in your recommendation? Thank you. I hope I'm clear.
Thank you, honorable members. We will now invite the delegation from Black Agricultural Commodities Federation for responses. My delegate, Akwat Otama. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and to the honorable members of Parliament. The first question was dealing with the model, EGY's model, of making available land to families as a basis for obviating populism. This is what we are seeing happening in China. This is what we are seeing happening in India, but especially under President Lula, who visited us during the BRICS summit, that when households are allocated productive land for agriculture, just as much as the department was actually doing during the era of one household, 1 hectare, there is no better way of protecting agricultural land than that. You give responsibility to people and households. It's another thing when they are not given the investment by the state, for instance, in terms of the FPSUs in the agri parks, for instance. They're given the tractors so that every family can just walk without going to East London from Mbandut, walk to an FPSU and borrow a tractor from Lima at an affordable price. And so that kind of an approach, provide land to households for production, and you provide the investment. The picture used here by Deputy Chairperson Utabo is a picture that comes from the erstwhile Department of Land Affairs, where infrastructure for Ukeba Igusha, Boya Igusha, sheep shearing was provided, for instance, in many households that are into sheep farming in the Eastern Cape. That program is called Genetic Improvement. It's about improving amadlelo, where these animals are grazing for food, and improving the genetics. You give that responsibility to households, then the state does not have to be the only fighter for the preservation of agricultural land. And in as far as the joined up government principle is concerned, the Black Agricultural Federation Commodities is actually saying there's no one department that can all by itself fight whatever it wants to do. The Department of Agriculture cannot fight this war on their own. This thing of building homes, for instance, Pisco Majelo, is all over. You go to Mpumalanga, you go to the Eastern Cape, households are being now built on land that was meant for raising food. It must involve other departments. It cannot win this war all by itself. That's the principle of joined up government. The Department of Infrastructure, for instance, can join the government in providing the necessary infrastructure, for instance, the roads that must go to rural areas as part of the preservation of this land. It's a very important question that is coming in regarding the indigenous forests. This is very well known. Our research going back to 1877, Uhengel, the forester off the Eastern Cape, for instance, the records are there in the library, MTAT. Henkel has been making the point that these forests, like a Dwesa, like a Dwebe, which are restitution projects, they've got to be protected. Because Abantu Baguzlali, they are eating food and they're getting herbs from these forests. For instance, Mbogolo that grows all the way to Sogedunjwa. It's a beautiful fruit, yellow, in its kind, Nombulawa. Very, very nutritious, more than a berry, not a blueberry, in terms of the nutritional value. But these have not been given the attention by government in terms of commercializing all of this fruit. And so we are saying align whatever this bill is saying to what the United Nations has already said. You cannot keep out of this bill the protection of lands where people are growing their food in a sustainable manner without even needing all of these poisonous fertilizers. They have been on these lands for centuries long before Abedum Bafike, and so protect this forest towards their source for their food. The last point, how do we then protect this communal land? We are saying must be able to tell us that there be infrastructural investment by the Department of Agriculture in joined up government with the Department of Infrastructure, and fence all of these forests and we preserve this natural food that is much better than the poison we are eating from this and from the retail stores today. Thank you.
Is that the conclusion on the side of the delegation? Any more input is fine. We covered. Dr. Swart, E.G. White was accused of plagiarism and many of such challenges. D.G., I'm going to need to protect my intellectual property of Mkogolo. So Mkogolo is wild in Mbeze. And I've produced a document on this and sits with the department. So Dr. Swart, I'm raising my eyes on this one. We are yet to see what is done by this fruit, because it is, for those that don't know, it is a Kai apple. It is a very nutrient-based fruit, but we watch it in Mvezo, eaten by goats mostly. A friend of mine once came, who's a landscaper, as he was looking after the garden there, the great place, decided to take a load full of this Kai apple in two black plastic bags. 2 weeks later, he came back with the best jam we've ever tasted. Secondly, he said you could also do a similar product than Amarula. So we were more inclined to the side of the jam. So it will be interesting what you unfold in this regard as Black Agricultural Commodities Federation. Honorable members, we'll now take our last presentation from Inyanda National Land Movement and Rural Women's Assembly, which will be presented by Mama Renette Haynes, whom we came in together as she was finding her ways around Parliament lost this morning.
Good
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson of the sitting, the committee, as well as the other members of the committee. Like you said, I'm Renate Yenis. I'm a farmer from a community in the Western Cape, and I'm here representing the Inyanda National Land Movement as well as the Rural Women's Assembly. So the Inyanda National Movement is a collective. We are national and we are based in four provinces, and we are working with small scale farmers as well as the Rural Women's Assembly South Africa. We are part of the SADC region and we are working in 11 countries throughout Africa. So I'm really appreciating the opportunity to present here on behalf of the farmers, the small scale farmers throughout South Africa. So first we want to thank the the committee for the opportunity to make a presentation towards the bill. And like I said, we are here on behalf of women and men, black smallholder farmers organized in the Inyanda National Movement as well as the Rural Women's Assembly South Africa. We do not use the word black as defined during apartheid, but to include all previous disadvantaged people during the apartheid system. Also, we, as a movement, we included we are based in black holders, crop and livestock farmers in several South African provinces in the Eastern Cape, Western Cape, Northern Cape, Limpopo and Free State. We have several concerns regarding the bill, and we trust that it will be taken up for the consideration with the committee and will contribute to the redrafting to this bill taking forward. Firstly, we encourage that the bill as follows. Firstly, recognize that it is national interest to preserve and promote the sustainable development of agricultural land for the production of food and other agricultural products for the primary purpose of sustaining and enhancing human life for the benefit of present and future generations, referring to preamble page 2. Secondly, we acknowledge that high-value agricultural land is scarce and non-renewable resource, and that the pressures exerted make it increasingly difficult to effectively and sustainable produce sufficient food. Thirdly, we acknowledge that the South African Constitution obliges the state to protect the environment for the present and future generations to ensure that everyone has access to sufficient food. And when we are saying to sufficient food, we are really putting emphasis that everyone has the right to food throughout South Africa. However, we submit that the bill fails in all of these and other aspects. Okay, so what will be dominant agricultural production model? So the bill fails to mention what systems of agricultural production we will be promoted. This is especially relevant in the bill's definition of optimal agricultural use, maximum productivity by unit area and unit time achieved by the best suited or adapting farming practice in a sustainable manner with minimum negative impacts on the natural agricultural resources upon which the agricultural economic depends, referring to page 6 of the bill. We know that South Africa has adopted an industrial agricultural model depending on agricultural chemical inputs. Besides, it is a model that focuses on the production of monocrops orientated to export, contribute to the loss of biodiversity in South Africa, and it's not preparing the country to deal with climate change. Also, we are saying that this model wanted to ensure that our agricultural land, our scarce and non-renewable resources, will be protected for future generations. And it's appointed by Dr. Orellana, the UN rapporteur, that was talking recently with the South African government in August 2023. When we are talking also reliance of the resilience of pesticides, we want to call attention that currently, as we are small scale farmers working and we are promoting agroecology, so it's for us important to really put emphasis that pesticides are really not good for the environment. So our recommendation at Nyanda and Rua is as follows. We recommend that the bill includes support for other agricultural methods of production, specifically when we are talking to agroecology, and compliance with what Dr. Oren Rana was saying to the government to immediately ensure the safe destruction of existing stockpiles and hazardous pesticides. On food security, priority for food, national consumption on export, our food security, we submit that under the bill, the state will continue to fulfill its obligation under the South African Constitution to ensure that everyone has access at all times to sufficient, safe and nutritious food, if access to food is mediated through market mechanisms. While South African agriculture claims to ensure food security for the country, currently we observe in South Africa that millions of people go hungry daily in our communities, malnutrition as well as the high levels of stunting among South African children are on the increase. In 2021, like the state of South Africa, 3.7 million reported having inadequate and severe inadequate access to food. In respect, we want to call attention again to Dr. Oren Rana's recommendation to South African state. He states, overcoming the legacy of environmental racism requires the state to rethink development model that is often focused on the short-term objective of increasing jobs and the economic growth at any cost. So our recommendation is as follows, that the bill spells out to what extent crop and livestock production of African agricultural land will be prioritized and ensure food for all South Africans versus the prioritization of the export-led model. Definition, viable farming units. We submit the factors written in definition, page 7, are limited and biased towards already established agricultural units and a lot excluded small-scale producers and emergent farmers. Smallholder farmers, black farmers, after centering over rent, dispossession and exclusion from agricultural production and from state support, while major state support was given to their white counterparts, free access to land, loans and finance through the land bank, secure market and marketing boards, etc. We're also saying the requirement that smallholder and emerging producers also need to have adequate buffer to cater for risk relating climate viability by 7, and we are also talking to the current storms that we are facing. Yeah. Also the definition of impact on the principle of viability and the principle of equitability, given a definition of a viable farming unit. These principles discriminate against the participation by vulnerable and disadvantaged farmers or potential farmers. Our recommendation is amend the definition of a viable farming unit and the exclusion of smaller farming units. Take into cognition smallholders grow the food that feeds the nation, accounting for up to 80% of production in sub-Saharan Africa and parts of Asia. Continue definition. So high-value agricultural crops, we submit the definition is missing. We think that is critical to be defined in part 4, page 10, 11, 2, 8, of the bill states that high-value agricultural land may be declared if best suited to produce acceptable levels of high-value agricultural goods. The land has agricultural potential above moderate. The land is irrigated agricultural land. Preserve the area primarily for food production. Our recommendation is 95% of South African water is allocated to industrial farmers and estimated 75% of these produce are exported, implying that water therefore is also then exported. Thus, the need to define high-value agricultural products, which crops are considered high value cultivated for what person, for who benefit and by whom. Our mission is on declaring protected agricultural areas, part 4 of the poll does not specify in what is the limit will be imposed to prevent the use of high potential agricultural land for tourism, grain farms as we see happening in South Africa currently. Our observation is that is with the increasing population, there is an urgent need to balance agricultural food production and shelter. South Africa must consider house policy and strategy. Our recommendation, the state must consider housing policy and strategy balancing agriculture and food production. The state needs to consider housing form with possible multi-purpose units integrating and balancing housing and food production. Principles. We submit there are some omissions failures in the bill, part 1, page 8. The principle of stability. The bill states that the principle of stability applies to all agricultural land and that food security, food insecurity adversely affects the stability of society. The principle of viability, once again, this deals with what is viable farming system. The bill fails, therefore, in several aspects. To mention that land reform and agrarian reform are not only necessary but are imperative in curing in the excess of high potential agricultural land to address the later cells of African history which still continues in the country. The principle of resilience, the bill fails to specify that a range of farming systems exist and have to be recognized. This includes agriculture farming, for which the South African government is currently adopting an agriculture strategy. Our recommendation is the bill must be explicit on how to propose to address and reverse the current high levels of food insecurity and social instability in South Africa, ensuring that all black smallholder and emerging farmers have also access to high level, high potential agricultural land and acknowledge agroecology as a form of agricultural production that contributes to food security. On the application of the Act, we are concerned about another unfunded mandate of local government. The bill states that the Act binds all organs of state in the national and local spheres of government as well as the provincial spheres. We are concerned that obligations placed on local government spheres will amount to another unfunded mandate. Our current experience across municipalities where farmers work, live, and farm are that they do not get little or no support from municipalities. So municipalities really don't give any support to small-scale farmers in a rural community. For example, while local government is meant to support national government initiatives in ensuring to accommodate land with infrastructure, municipalities insist this is not part of their mandate and that they have no funds. They are failing to integrate municipal spatial development framework, like our previous speakers has also put a lot of emphasis on this, and frameworks and integrated development plan, the IDPs. So our recommendation is all responsibilities allocated to the municipal spheres of government in relation to agricultural land in the areas of jurisdiction must be fully funded. This information must be transparent and must be public. On the preparation of provincial agricultural plan, who will be included in defining what agricultural science will be adapted or accepted? We know that there is bias towards industrial agriculture reliant on the input of agri-inputs. This is under the backing of powerful agri-businesses. Dr. Orellana also points out that this in his research shows the extent of agrochemical industry influence on information and standard settings on the South African government, reliant on outdated South African legislation. This bias continues to reflect by the drafters of the bill. The bill ignores that across the world there are millions of farmers who practice alternative farming systems on small plots based on reliable and documented scientific facts, who are the ones contributing to the food security of their communities. Our own members practice and have a deep understanding of agroecology principles of food production based on both traditional and contemporary knowledge. During COVID lockdowns, many ensured food availability in the communities as food wasn't provided by the dominant market mechanism. We submit that agroecology farming leads should be included in the contributing to the definition of provincial agricultural sector plan.
on the preparation of agriculture, provincial agricultural plan. Compilation in participatory manner, the criteria that the compilation of the provincial agriculture sector plan should be done in a participatory manner is unlikely to met by the bill. The bill itself already reflects skill participation with industrial moral bias. Presently, many communities in informal homelands are marginalized in decision by traditional authority and government as their lands are being targeted by local and foreign investors in agriculture. The bill fails to mention the need to comply with the principle of free, prior, and informed consent if communities' land use will be redefined. Our recommendation is the bill includes that whenever plans are made to target agricultural land and resources held by the FBIC principle must be complied with by any interest party, including provincial governments, a principle embodied in the United Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, gives people the right to give or withhold consent to any activity or project that may affect the ancestral land, territory, and natural resources. Part 4, procedure to declare protected agricultural areas. The bill says that the MSC must consult the municipalities in which the provincial protected areas fall and given notice of the intention in the Gazette and at least 2 national newspapers distributed in affected areas. We submit that this will exclude the participation of vulnerable and disadvantaged and potential farmers, stated in page 8. Our recommendation is as follows. Intentions to declare protected agricultural areas must be published through a variety of media platforms. Local newspapers, predominantly our recommendation in the local language that farmers are speaking, social media, government websites, local radios and TV broadcasts. Procedure for agro-system management and listing activity in agricultural areas from page 13 to 17 of the bill. The bill states that no activity may commence on any agricultural land without an agro-ecosystem authorization. This must be listed and be published in the Gazette, inviting interest parties to submit written comment on the proposed listing within a period of at least 30 days before listing. Our recommendation is A. To ensure information reaches marginalized farmers and communities, this should appear in a range of media as outlined in the recommendation above. The bill needs to be explicit or whether traits of genetically modified crops will be allowed or restricted in this area. If allowed, how will farmers, inhabitants, public be informed? Chapter 5. National Agroecology Agro-Eco Information System. According to the bill, the content of the Agro-Eco Information System includes, amongst other, agricultural potential capability system, sustainability, conservation status and use, and socio-economic information per farming unit, the use of agricultural land owner and all user were applicable concerning nationality and gender and other information as may be prescribed. Our recommendation is that the bill include the recommendation made by the FOA voluntary guidelines on the responsible governance of tenure of land, fisheries and forestries that where tenure rights of indigenous people and other communities with customary tenure systems are formally documented. They should be recorded with other public, private and communal tenure rights. However, the community should be given the opportunity to consent or object. States should protect indigenous people and other communities with customary tenure systems against the unauthorized use of land, fisheries and forests by others. Where community does not object, states should assist to formally document and publicize information on the nature and location of land, fisheries, and forest and use control by the community. Thus, we recommend that the bill provide objection or consent of local. last, foremost to last, consultation on page 29. The bill reports that public consultations were held in provinces and listed the two stakeholders who attended. We submit how were these stakeholders started, identified, hear about the consultations, the dominance of powerful economic sectors, agriculture, mining, energy, banking, landowners, planners, suggest that there were no narrow exposure to the announcement of public consultation. This is also reflected in the small number of municipalities and bias towards municipalities in the Western Cape. 3 out of the 5, other than the Swane and Itokweni municipalities from other provinces, were absent. Other than Bio, what South Africa, also NGO that was for small-scale farms in KwaZulu-Natal, there was no representation of smallholder association or NGOs and universities that support their work. Our recommendation is this reinforces our previous recommendation that the listing of activities by departments must appear on multiple platforms in local newspapers, in predominant language, social media, government websites, local radio, and TV broadcasts, etc. So we conclude by saying the recommendation made during 2016-2017 by the high-level panel of assessment of key legislation and acceleration of fundamental change, chaired by our former president, Khalema Mokgante, there are several bills in Parliament at this time being withdrawn, as they were not meeting the constitutional rights of people living in the former homeland and not addressing land reform remain valid. Therefore, we submit that the PDAL bill fails similarly. Thank you very much, Chairperson, for giving the opportunity. And my colleagues, I also want to say that I have a colleague that is with me, so any questions, my colleagues will assist me. So really thank you for giving the opportunity as a former farmer perspective to be here and represent the farmers throughout South Africa. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. That's our presentation from Inyanda National Movement and the Rural Women's Assembly of South Africa. We'll open the session for questions of clarity or comments. Akbare Priya.
Dankie, voorzitter. Chairperson, I just have one question, and that is on slide 11. We submit that agroecological farming leaders should be included in contributing to the definition of provincial agricultural sector plans. I was just wondering if they can maybe, you know, provide an example how they foresee that these agroecological farming leaders would actually contribute to those plans. Would they be part of a board or a stakeholder? If we can just get a clear idea on that. And that is all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Barbara, the Honourable Clapper.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also thank Inyanda for the presentation and for representing the rural and marginalized, the vulnerable groups of the society. I don't know if I missed it, whether they supported the bill or not. But, Chair, I think most of the submissions are backed by recommendations to say this is what they would recommend. It will need us, like I've indicated, the department also to consider that and come back to us on that, if that is feasible, if it's covered or not. But the presenter, when she started, indicated the concern that the bill failed to indicate the model or something. So I would really implore her to agree that we protect and preserve, then we come with the relevant models. Because if we don't have the land, if everything else is gone, models will not help at this stage, despite already existing ones. But it is something that probably what comes first, is it the egg or the chicken, something like that.
The issue of the unfunded mandate on local government, I would not agree much on that, and I would request them or just submit that they look at that, because like we've indicated, this bill seeks to align what you call cooperative governance, not taking away what is existing. Local government is responsible for integrated development plans, your IDPs. And this bill is saying in those IDPs, let there be agricultural sectors that are funded. Local government is responsible for local economic development, your LED. We want to see in those LED plans, agricultural sector plans that are funded. But in the interest of local, of our cooperative governance chain, you have your, what do they call, these forums, study districts, where mayors will stay, will sit on those and everything, but intergovernmental something, where bigger projects are referred to bigger structures for funding. But I think it is dealing with this thing that at the local government, you will not have anything. My experience is that you will find a rural woman sending a business plan that needs 5,000 to a province, to an MEC. And you ask yourself, what is happening at local government? What's happened to the special, mayor special programs? Where's LED and all so such things? It needs to be aligned. But I'm saying I don't agree with the issues of it bringing unfunded mandates, but let everyone else do what they're supposed to do. The trust of cooperative governance, other bigger responsibilities will be aligned in the spirit of intergovernmental relations and cooperative governance. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Tlhapi. The visit, Honorable Tlhapi.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have any question for him.
Honorable Tlhapi, the visit. The Honorable Tlhapi.
No, I don't have any questions.
Of course. The Honorable Tlhapi.
Thank you, Chair. I don't have a question also for the presentation. It's only that Honorable Tlhapi covered me on that part of having not got it clearly whether they support or not support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mpapama.
Thank you very much for the presentation. No questions, Chair.
Thank you. The Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for your presentation, and I note your concern as obviously representing the vulnerable farmers, starting with the obviously the consultation that the MEC will be consulting with the municipality, and that you feel that this might exclude the emerging farmers. I think that is acknowledged. I think those are some of the technical stuff that can be looked at and changed. But the area that I am really quite interested in is the area that you indicated that the concern is the way the wording is used, talking about the high-value crops or viable farming units, that your feel is that it might be exclusionary to emerging farmers in the manner that it tends. But I think just to bring back to this bill, it's about preserving agricultural land. So high-value land, it does not have to have crops on it or be commercially farmed. It has to be scientifically proven that this is a high-value crop or high-value land, you know, viable farming units, you know, to produce. So I do not know if there are any substantive, you know, comments that you want to make around that. Primarily is the duty of the government to ensure that it identifies those high-value crop land or high-value crop land, you know, that needs to be protected and do the exercise as such. So I don't think that the threat around, you know, the issue that this might be excluding me as a smallholder farmer, I don't think the intention of the bill is such, but I mean the department can clarify as well to ask a little bit later when they're going to respond to your submissions. But that's my own view. But if you've got a view around it, you are welcome to really maybe share. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Ndadema-Sipa. Over to our presenters for responses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for the questions as well as the comments. Firstly, to honourable member Priyad, I was here. I think some of you will recognise me. I was here in March this year, and we were presenting towards the agroecology, the policy, and how we can get support and how it can be implemented. And I think there was, since March, there was a lot of work being done. And I think we can give a thanks to the department as they are going to, we are really working. So a lot of work has been done. And so this morning while I was sitting here in the city, I received the email that we are going to implement. So I think that is part of the plans moving forward, and to give recognition to small scale farmers that are practicing agroecology in South Africa. So yeah, I think that is being followed up, and we really, there is plans that we have sites throughout South Africa, and where the department will come and do visits to see what is the work that we are doing on the sites and how we are promoting agroecology in the rural communities. So thank you for that one. I hope it's covered, honorable member. Okay, we're then going to do the next.
So thanks once again for this opportunity to be part of this discussion and also deliberate our views on the policy development. I'm Boyce Tom. She could not get time to introduce me, so we are also working together, you know, in this work of supporting, you know, and also trying to advocate the land rights, you know, from the views of those that, you know, I think earlier on someone recognized the existence of these very urban, you know, land users that do not actually, you know, show up, you know, quite clear in terms of how they're getting recognized. But my comment is around the use of the words, maybe say what do we consider as a high value crops or something like what is considered as a viable unit. So around that, when we look at these terms, also struggle, you know, in terms of how, you know, they come across to us in terms of the understanding. You know, and therefore have a strong feeling that perhaps this is a one-dimensional kind of a view, you know, to what agricultural land uses actually is, and also the consideration of what is high value crops. Because some other experiences that we have learned, you know, in some villages that we worked, there have been some circumstances where, you know, people are maybe, say, encouraged to commercialize. Meaning that being a complete, you know, different form of land use in a particular area, displacing what is already existing. So those are some of the things, because it comes to the logic of what would be viable, you know. So we look in that way, and we know exactly, you know, what has come out of some of those processes, you know, in terms of the gains or loss, you know, from the communities, you know, that is given in. One, their labor, but also their land, you know, to such kind of production that is considered to be of high value. Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members. That is our responses from Nyanda National Land Movement and Rural Women's Assembly of South Africa. Let me take this opportunity to thank our stakeholders who have taken time to appear before the portfolio committee on these national public hearings on the preservation and development of agricultural land there. And I'm certain as we put together our report, your input will be utilized by the honorable members. Want to also take the opportunity to thank the officials of the department who have been here with us from the start of the session and have been able to listen to the input given. And on Friday we'll be engaging with the department on their input on the oral submissions that we have received as a committee, which will also enable us to be able to put together a complete report for the National Assembly. I want to thank the respected members of the media who have been able to sit through this session. But always, honorable member, it is a pleasure, honor to have you here in these engagements of the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, and your robust engagement with the presentations that are afforded to us is exemplary. We thank you therefore having availed yourselves and the staff of the Portfolio Committee in Parliament who have made these public hearings a success. From the 20th of June we have been crisscrossing the country through the assistance, and I want to take this opportunity to thank all the staff of the Portfolio Committee and Parliament that have been of service to us. We have from legal services who have been with us through this session today in case we may need to speak to the legal team on the bill, and in regards to our report they thought they must come and listen in to the session. So we want to thank you for being here with us, honorable members. That brings us to the end of our proceedings today, and I therefore want to bring this session to its end. The meeting stands adjourned. Please have a wonderful afternoon and the evening ahead. A great week ahead, and stay safe. Thank you.